Okay, so good to see you all in these apocalyptic times. I hope that your individual apocalypses are treating you well. For some reason, I'm always asked to talk about story. Reading stories, living stories, that kind of thing. I'm happy to do it. I always enjoy doing it. But I should probably come out with another album so I can play some different songs at some point. We live in a very strange moment. I think you all know that. This section of my talk is labeled, "If Only the Mayans Had Warned Us." The U.S. Empire appears to be rapidly composting. And based on the smell, it's going to be some pretty fertile soil. Some dank, dark, rich soil. But everything's kind of just staggering down, rotting out. Strange things. An omen, a portent. So if you're capable, rewind your minds about 9 months and tell me, what would you have said to anyone who had predicted this exact scenario? What would you have said? If someone had had the truth about what was right around the corner, how willing to hear it would you have been? Would you have seen it coming? Would you have said, well, that makes sense? And we should have. We all should have known that the hand is written on the wall a long while back about the U.S. Empire, about how we've been behaving ourselves, how we've been comporting ourselves, how we've been living with the wealth, the historic amount of wealth that we've been given. This is the year where God said, boo. Everything goes down. Sandcastles collapsing. Turns out we don't need the Olympics. Lots of things have been crashing and burning, and many other things have all received that order, and they flipped open the little protective covering and hit the big red self-destruct button. This insane economy that we've had, this crazy, crazy wealthy economy, is just down. State universities, down. Public schools, all these apparently invincible institutions with one boo. Like, that's it. A boo. Now, even if this pandemic is every bit as bad as we were told, historically speaking, it's still just boo. Like, even if we accept everything that's been told to us, and that whether it's true or false is much less important to me than how we live in light of it, how we live in a time that's currently dominated by people's panic and fear and despair and worry and recrimination and sidelong glances, fighting envy, scratching and clawing each other. We're like a bunch of drowning people who can just scratch the lifeguard's eyes right now. It's a really, really wild time, but we can just assume that it's every bit as bad as you would read in the New York Times. If it is every bit as bad as we read in the New York Times, it remains, historically speaking, not as bad as Genghis Khan. The fall of Rome, the bubonic plague, the Ottoman expansion, World War II, World War I, the American Civil War, pretty much anything in your history book. If there's something in a history book, it's pretty much worse than this. Other than the amount of people, the sheer number of people scurrying. And it's another moment when we get to see God switch sides, when he spins people in a circle. It's like we're all faced with a pinata. We're all blindfolded and being spun in a circle and given a stick. And suddenly the conservatives love Sweden. Like, how did that happen? Have you forgotten everything else that you think, and the liberals hate Sweden? Like, what's Sweden was this, but it was this thing you loved. I heard so much about Sweden. Now nothing. But again, that part, like the actual facts, really don't matter for what we're talking about tonight, which is how we, as characters in this moment, characters who cannot be omniscient, we cannot know the actual facts. We can't know if COVID-19 has got our names on that list. We don't know. Maybe. Like, we don't know. We're not omniscient. And there's this big scary thing. People are running around. And either people act brazen and ignore it and they fight about the facts, or people are terrified about it and they fight about the facts. But how are we living? How are we making our choices? And whom do we fear? How we behave in this story is really, really essential. And we do all have the information to make those decisions. We might not all ever get the facts, the data we need to make lots of other decisions. Maybe we do, maybe we don't. But we have enough information to tell us how to live and how to be and how to image God in this particular narratival context. So, 9 months back, somebody tells you there's going to be, you know, nationwide riots, panic, fear. Planned Parenthood was going to denounce Margaret Sanger. Woodrow Wilson is just a bridge too far for people. I mean, I've never been fond of Woodrow Wilson, but it's funny to see everyone come around to my perspective. Strangely, in this massive American empire, mammon has lost its slippery grip on our souls for some reason. Everyone stopped caring about how to make the most money. That's gone. And America is currently detoxing. We're in rehab from sports, universities, the Olympics, Disney, and the freedom to self-govern. And all too often, also from worship, from fellowship, from the bread and the wine. Like, everybody's just in rehab from all sorts of things. Like, we're in detox mode, but we're in detox mode from stuff that we shouldn't be detoxing from. And we're in detox mode from stuff we should have detoxed from a long while back. In these crazy days, even the lowest levels of any secular government in this nation is willing to require that women cover their faces. And they fix this by also saying, well, and men. Everybody. And it's interesting because either that authority exists and masks could be the best idea ever, and that's not the question. The question is whether the authority exists for a small town mayor to assign a dress code to healthy people, like to capture a small slice of people that are not. Like, that's new. That's another new thing that's happening in our time. So they could be totally right. They could be completely correct, but that jurisdictional authority is brand new. That's new. Pretty sure no governor of any state has ever banned singing before. That's interesting. I was just told that Washington State University across the state line has required masks on tubas. And I'm confident that that's gonna be the difference maker. If they just get masks on the tubas, Seattle's gonna go back to normal, Washington's gonna become calm, everything's going to normalize. So we might not have been able to predict this, but all of us should have been able to predict this, because what comes after pride, right? We know that answer. Was America a proud nation? Yes. So what comes after that? We should know. We should have already known. We might not have known it would happen right now in our time this way. I sure didn't. I had no idea. But I honestly, I really think that anyone who could have told us who our president would be and how he would be behaving and everything else that's come right now, anybody who claims to have known that is mad or receiving very strange visions. So we live in a very, very bizarre time, and I honestly wouldn't have believed it. Not very long ago, I would have said, yeah, well, something's going to come. Something's going to happen. We're going to, you know, get in trouble. The empire will deteriorate and rot and kind of fade away like all empires do, all of them. Like, there's a life cycle for any kind of human institution, except for the church, except for the people of God. That will be eternal. The body of Christ will live forever. So here we are right now, and whether we are enjoying ourselves or not, whether we think, finally, an interesting year, I hate boredom, or finally, I have time to catch up on every single thing Netflix has made. And won't that be healthy? Regardless of what our attitude might be, God put us here now. We all know that. We're here. We're in 2020. We are in that Chinese curse of may you live in interesting times. God gave us these scenes and situations. He gave us conversations with brothers, sisters, people in the faith about masks. He gave us dilemmas with local government around restrictions. He gave us bizarre overreach into the churches of California. Like, we've got all these things going on that he's given us, and we are not allowed to resent those things. We are not allowed to resent obstacles, to resent hardships. He gave us all these scenes and situations, but he's also giving you, in all of them, your obligations, which comes out of your relationships, fundamentally to God, and then to spouses, and to family, and to community members. You have obligations, you have choices, you're a free agent in his narrative, and he's just giving you a strange improv situation. So you're on stage every day now, driving around, going to the grocery store, traveling to go to a conference, and you're given lots of dialogue to write on the fly. You're having to think through how you behave in a wild, wild time. But that's not new. That's not new at all. We already lived in a wild time. We were just very, very used to it. And it was a time of wealth. And the deterioration was there culturally. We were seeing it everywhere. And you were already having to live and already having to make decisions. It's just the earthquake right now, the stampede right now, is making everything a heightened. The consequences are heightened. The stakes appear to be heightened, but they honestly aren't any higher than they were. All of you exist as immortal souls. All of you exist in relationship to other people who are immortal souls. And the stakes are whether you honor God or dishonor God, whether you get a well-done, good and faithful servant, or whether you're in the outer darkness. That remains exactly the same as it has always been. It is constant. So there are many things, the fundamental things, that have not changed at all in this strange story that we are all living and reading simultaneously. All of us will be called to give an account for how we stewarded this moment. Later on, God will say, your master will say, I gave you a pandemic. Where's my return? What did you do with it? What did you accomplish? What choices did you make? What changes did you make? How did you function? How did you function in this pandemic? Where's my return? He's going to ask for the harvest that we brought in. When our master says, I gave you faith and freedom in a time of panic, I freed you from death and judgment in a time of panic, I gave you cause for deep joy and a peace that surpasses all understanding, when all the other people were stampeding, what kind of return did you get? As a side note, that famous phrase, a peace that surpasses all understanding, comes from Philippians. And in a time of universal peace, in a time of universal comfort, there you won't really be noticeable if you're sitting there with your peace that surpasses all understanding. It's not really you know, popping for other people who are all unafraid, comfortable, think they're going to live forever and are super wealthy. Right now, it's like the contrast has been turned up in a black and white photo. Everything's shaking out. The line is getting hard. Now is the kind of time when you can actually have a peace that surpasses all understanding. That comes in trial. Now, it happens for all of us. All of us have friends who die, grandparents who die. Everybody we know is going to die. We're going to have death scenes. We're going to go to funerals, and we will all be given, and even in the peaceful times, opportunities to have and to manifest that peace that surpasses understanding, that faith as we look at death, that faith as we look at what comes beyond the grave. We'll all have that opportunity. This is strange only in that we're all doing it at once, together. We normally stagger this out a little bit more. Normally, one person has a trial. One person loses a child in a body of believers, and they manifest that peace. They're a testimony to God's grace. But here we all are at once. The church has been given an opportunity to manifest that peace in a time of global panic and trial. In Luke 19:20, we see that pitiful servant reporting on how he managed his austere master's mina, whatever that was, denominationally. I don't know how much money that was worth, but he had one. He was given one. In our case, how did we manage? Well, what has God given you? His image, all these relationships, this strange time of upheaval, everybody you know and are communicating with. And what did you do? Did you wrap it in a handkerchief and bury it? Social distancing? All the way? What did you do? Did you just snark at people on Facebook? And you say, well, I lost followers for you. But I also gained some much stranger ones. Did you alienate your great aunt? Like that's what you did with your pandemic? Congratulations. That's quite a return on this very, very strange opportunity. Did we wrap it all up in a handkerchief and bury it? If so, we're going to be in trouble. We got to live in this interesting time. We got given this moment in the history of our country, in the history of our church. And for the rest of our days, we will all be able to look at each other and say, remember 2020? And I honestly hope that it's kind of a standout year and that we're not in 2035 saying, oh, those were the good old days. Sweet, friendly 2020. But just know that's possible. When this was first hitting in March, I was telling people the back half of 2020 was going to be much uglier and nastier and intense than the first half. Like, it's going to be, you know, ramping up. I didn't have to be a genius. There's a presidential election. It's like, it's there. It's at the end of the year just waiting. And then everybody's reactions to that presidential election are on the other side of it, whichever way it goes. Whichever way it goes, we're going into more frothy seas. So we'll be able to look at each other and say, remember 2020? Or remember what life was like before 2020? Remember, what was that thing we used to, what was it? Football. Right, there was a thing. This thing we did. There were things called concerts. Or like some of us back in Y2K, and I can happily say I wasn't one of them. Remember when we embarrassed ourselves completely in 2020? Some of us embarrassed ourselves completely because there was going to be a computer glitch and the whole Western world was going to collapse. It's like, oh, no. There's a bad virus coming in about 20 years, and it's going to be much worse than Y2K. Don't embarrass yourself right now. Don't get yourself into a position where you have to look at each other and be like, you know, that was awkward when I bought all that grain from the Mormons. Yeah. Like that's invested heavily, buried it. Yeah, good job. In this story, in this moment, the Christian church, like the rest of our country, is currently on God's threshing floor. There are evangelicals in the bag for Trump, like just all the way in the bag for Trump, as if he's a minor prophet, or at least a chess genius, instead of a orange-tinted reality show producer. And he's producing quite the reality show. I mean, episode after episode, people just can't look away. So there's evangelicals in the back for Trump, and they look at Trump as if their hope is in him. How terrifying is that? Their hope is there, really, in Trump. Now, because I hate boredom and because I like stories, I've been kind of relishing 2020, and I kind of relished some of the upheaval. I was just telling a friend, it's like, no, I mean, seriously, you want to take away Trump's Twitter? How else will the flame start? You know, it's like the pilot light for chaos. So there are evangelicals who treat Trump like he's a minor prophet, as if he's the source of their hope, and he should not be. There are evangelicals who would rather die than support Trump because of what would happen to their Twitter following. Like, that's where their fear is. They want to be accepted in certain places, and so they can't openly support the orange man, the crazy, crazy orange man. And they don't care. It wouldn't matter what Trump did. He could be the sanest individual on the continent, and asterisk, he's not. But he could be, and it wouldn't matter. It just would not matter. We have evangelicals doing that. We have evangelicals doing the direct opposite. There are evangelicals standing against radical government encroachment in our schools and sanctuaries, and there are evangelicals eagerly holding the coats for mobs who are attacking their brothers and sisters. Like, how? What's going on? That contrast is sharpening. Things are being divided. There's a lot of imagery in Scripture about things being divided, things being sorted, the threshing floor, the sheep and the goats, the wheat and the tares, or a less drastic distinction right now, people whose fear is in God, people whose fear is in man. And that can manifest in all sorts of different ways. Just because somebody has a mask on doesn't mean that their fear is in man. They could still have their fear in God. It's like, but it's gonna shake out. Like, we're gonna divide those of us who are afraid of death and those of us who are not, those of us who have a hope that we have faith, we've received a new life, and we know what waits for us on the other side, and we rest in that confidence, and we live in that confidence day by day, and those of us who forget it quickly. Things are getting threshed. Now, more than ever, all of us, every Christian, needs to remember first things, first principles, first loyalties, your first loves, your first obligations. The bedrock, the foundation, the things that make you a faithful believer. Nothing in the frothy seas outside changes our duties as characters in God's story. The frothy seas outside can make fulfilling those duties higher risk. During World War II, marriage vows didn't change. The duties of a husband didn't change, although, and on a principial level, although the actual behavior can change. A man can love his family and go to Normandy, but he's still operating out of a sacrificial love for his people, for his family. The fruits of the Spirit didn't change in either of the world wars or ever. They don't change in a time of persecution. They don't change in a time of plague. They don't change when your house burns down. They don't change when a friend dies. They don't change when you get hit by a bus and are in a wheelchair. The fruits of the Spirit don't change. No matter what scene you're moving through, you don't get to suddenly decide, I'm going to abandon those. I'm going to walk away from those, because you don't understand. It's gnarly out there. Like, it's wild out there. That has no bearing. That has no effect whatsoever on how you are to comport yourself and on the fruit you're supposed to be manifesting. But your decisions do become harder. The things you decide to do and the way you self-analyze your choices, well, that becomes harder too. So I'm going to talk first to husbands, fathers, and then I'm going to kind of bounce through wives, mothers, brothers, sisters, and kind of touch on how we should be behaving in this story. hopefully for all of us in different situations. So, husbands and fathers, on which altars are you placing your sacrifices in 2020? Where are you going with your sacrificing? What are you sacrificing? What are those sacrifices, and on which altars are you placing them? Have you sacrificed worship? Have you sacrificed your children's educations, schooling? Have you sacrificed fellowship for your family? Have you functionally allowed your family to become excommunicated? How have you handled this, and for what? So here's all these things that you're giving up, all these things you're sacrificing, and to what end, on what altar, and to whom? Have you sacrificed all these things in exchange for your own vocational preference, your vocational comfort, the thing you like doing, the place you like being? Like, is that where you're sacrificing these things? A fear of change, a fear of the unknown, which would just be a lack of faith. Like, are you failing to even attempt to save these things for your family right now? Are you just allowing them to be taken and you're waiting until the secular gods will restore them? Are you just hanging out in Egypt, waiting to see what comes to you next? If you did this in any year, that would be bad. If you were ready to sacrifice your kids' education, spiritual health, whatever else, for anything, fill in the blank, anything earthly, and that's what you've placed on the altar, it would be bad in that year. But in this year, it's a little more extreme. This year will bring bigger consequences, deeper scars, wounds that take much longer to heal. Are you prioritizing your sentimental connection to old generational roots and locations over your commitment to the health of future generations? Are you trying to live out of a love for things in the rear view without looking forward at things on the road ahead? And it's easy for us to do that. I mean, I can relate to that. I live here. My grandfather moved here. He picked the spot. I was born here. I was raised here. And I have to be willing to head out. I can't make a decision for my kids based on sentimental attachment. Thank God I think that I don't have to right now, but I have to be willing to. If I love being a writer, like, I want to do that professionally, but it's harder now, so I got to take my kids to New York. Like, that would be amazingly selfish. Like, I have to be ready to lay stuff down, and I have to be ready to lay stuff down on the right altar and for the right reasons. I can understand people who've had generations of guys who've done stuff before. No, you don't understand. My father, his father, we've done these. We've always done this. We've always gone to Texas A&M. We've always gone to Alabama. Roll Tide. How could we not? How could I possibly not send my children there? I mean, I would feel shame in my hoodie. It's like fathers, husbands, just Americans, humans, we make decisions for very strange reasons and out of odd loyalties. And we need to make sure right now and this time that our loyalties are completely calibrated, absolutely checked out, spiritually healthy before we sacrifice anything, before we allow sacrifices to be offered that involve our families. I can promise you this. I'm no prophet, but I can tell you this about your life. Every guy in this room, your life is not supposed to be easy. If it's easy, you're doing it wrong. You're failing. It's not supposed to be easy. That's not what you're for. If you're a husband, if you're a father, then you are meant to be a sacrifice. You are meant to be the seawall where waves break until you do. You're meant to be the trunk of the tree in the storm. When God requires your wife and children to sacrifice, you should be trying to find a way to climb on that altar, saying, "Take me instead." That is the narrative life that a husband and a father should be living. What are you giving up for your kids right now? Besides what just got taken from you by the state, what are you giving up for your wife? What are you doing? What's breaking you down? What is sending you into your grave? How are you spending your moments for others? And now we can also see people who get into ministry, people who pour themselves into gospel, evangelism. We can see them do that at the expense of their children as well. They can pour themselves into immortal souls that are further away, like immortal souls that are a little bit more out of reach as opposed to the ones that are around their dining room table. Like, start there. Start there. Start dying. Start being the sacrifice. That's the character you should be. That's the character you should be in 2016. That's the character you should have been in 2016 AD, BC. Doesn't matter. Either side. Doesn't matter what's happening. That's how husbands are supposed to image the husband. That's how we're supposed to do it. We're supposed to be imitating the Messiah, the one who came and was the sacrifice. We're supposed to do that before he came, way BC, based on the promises. We're supposed to do it now in that light that we've received. Do not go with your own personal preferences or where you feel fulfilled personally. That has nothing to do with anything. It doesn't. Look at your wife, look at your kids, make the decisions based on how you can best lay your life down for them in a way that will be lasting. Wives and mothers, this is always the one where I can get in trouble. It's one of those rules that you're not, you can get up front and you can lay into guys as hard as you want. And everybody says, yes, yes, they're all morons, including the guys. The guys are like, mm-hmm, yep. Yeah. And then as soon as you move on to the ladies, especially as a guy, people are like, hey, how could you say such a rude thing? Do you realize that was not affirming? At all. So let's just start from a point of be affirmed. So be warmed and filled. Wives and mothers, are you a font of blessing, encouragement, and courageous comfort for your family, or a font of worry and complaints? Are you the one who's always pointing out the flaw? Are you the official complaint department for your husband, for what he's trying to accomplish? Are you treating your kids like they're supposed to be employees, making your life easier, and everything's frustrated? That usually doesn't come when they're super little. That starts to come later, because when they're super little, it's hopeless. You can't even try. That usually comes as soon as you have one old enough to watch the other one. And then you start assigning them your duties. It's called delegation. And when they do a bad job, you're very upset at how they did your job. Do you act in a way that functionally puts your husband perpetually on trial? Like, you're always sitting in judgment. You're always waiting. You always have a fresh accusation or concern. It's harder right now, but there's still Facebook, so it's possible. Are you perpetually putting them on trial, and your mother, your sisters, your friends are always the jury? They're always deliberating, and you always have new and exciting evidence of something. Women are the bedrock of culture in families, in communities, anywhere. Women are the bedrock of culture. When they shake, everything comes down. Everything comes down. Don't shake. Don't panic. The peace that surpasses all understanding. That's what you're aiming at. Right now, when you're worried, right now, when your husband's struggling to get paid, right now, when kids are misbehaving and school's getting canceled, and you're looking like you're going to have to homeschool another, well, four plus the neighbor's kids, I don't know. Like, right now, as the burden is growing, as everything's worse, as you thought, we'll move to Moscow, it'll fix everything, and Logos was full. Right now, as life is getting crazy, Do you have the peace that surpasses all understanding because everything you do is unto him? Or are you trying to live in a way that simplifies your life and you are the complaint department? Do you treat like your children like employees or like the immortal souls they are, the little siblings of the one who sits at the right hand of the Father, the one who tasked you with tending and training those kids? If you act like your kids fundamentally belong to you, you're already failing. They don't. Like, God gave them to you. You don't own them. You're on duty. You've been given immortal souls. They are the little brothers and sisters of the Messiah. They are blood relatives of the Messiah. And you've been tasked with this duty. You are here to raise and to train. You are not here to possess. You are not here to possess them, their childhoods, their futures. Like, you're sending them out. When you start, and this is really easy as a father of five, I understand how easy it is. When you start making decisions based on what makes your kids easier to parent, what is simpler, not on what makes them bolder, brighter, and more salty. And incidentally, when your kids are bold, bright, and salty, it complicates things in the home. So it's like, man, I love my kids. They're all super bold, bright, and salty. And other people are like, wait, what? Like, we want them to be well-behaved and institutionalized in the family. They know not to run. They know not to laugh too loudly. They know not to wake you before 7. They know never throw up in your bed. Oh, that's just a firm rule. Or in our house, one of the legendary ones was never to throw up while falling downstairs. I mean, I don't know why we didn't make the rule in advance, because if we thought of it, it never would have happened. It's really easy to try to make your own children easier to manage. That's not the goal. The goal is not to raise children easier to manage. That makes them easier to manage out there as well as in your home. You don't want them flavorless. You want them dangerous. And they're not going to be perfect, which means if you're trying to raise dangerous children, some things are going to go wrong at some point, and there's going to be some fireworks. Like, that's how it's going to be. And that should be your goal. And this is more unique to wives and mothers, of wanting to, like, calm the rodeo, wanting to tame these animals in the home. And you do want to train them in manners and behavior and decorum, and you want them to become more mature as they grow. Yes, but you never want to cut the saltiness. You want to fuel that, feed it, train it, guide it, and then release it on the world, which could mean that your kid comes home with having rather interesting conversations with cops. You're like, oh, you went there. Okay, well, let's talk through how you could improve that next time. They're not going to be perfect, but you should be glad when they go for it, when they lean in, when they're not frightened. Brothers, by this I mean all single men. Again, this is easy. I can punch harder here. For whom are you sacrificing? Because it better be for somebody, and it cannot be for you. Well, I work. I hang out with my friends. I've got the new PlayStation. I mean, a single guy with $30,000 a year, it's pretty cozy. It's not hard if you have zero ambition and you're willing to not sacrifice for anybody. For whom are you sacrificing? For whom are you laboring? It cannot be for you. You exist as a sacrifice. If you are going to image your older brother, if you are going to image the Father, then you have to be more than just a passive single guy floating through the Christian community who just hasn't found the one or gave up after being rebuffed a couple times. For whom are you sacrificing? For whom are you laboring? It has to start with God. That's where it must begin. And then from there, it moves into your immediate relationships and into your community. lay your life down. Just because you haven't gotten up front and said some vows to one particular girl does not mean you get to store up your heartbeats for yourself. Your strength is your own. No, it's not. It isn't. Go and die. Go find that cross and pick it up. She might even have a name. Go and die. If God has a girl for you, fantastic. If God doesn't have a girl for you, it doesn't change. Well, it changes a lot how it looks, but it doesn't change the principle. You are made in the image of God. You are supposed to image your older brother, Jesus Christ, to the world. That does not look like a safe, well-funded PlayStation life. It doesn't. Lots of travel, at least there was, before March. Congratulations. It's not what you're for. It's not why you exist. Sisters, by this I mean all single women, the same thing applies. For whom are you sacrificing? And it can't be for you. Pray that God would multiply the number of lives you can touch. Be faithful in every single relationship that's within arm's reach. Start there. Be faithful with the little. And we all know, as sure as pride goeth before destruction, what happens when you've been faithful with a little. There is an author, and he's given us various cheats about what he does with his characters. If you're faithful with a little, you will be given much, and you'll be faithful with much. So if you have six people within arm's reach, how are you being faithful in those relationships? If you have a whole community, if you have awkward family relations, if you have strange cousins, if you have access to all these people, how are you being faithful in those relationships? If you've not been given a husband and you've not been given kids, what are you for? Well, if God hasn't given it to you, that's not what you're for. But you're for something. He's made you for something. You bear his image, and you are supposed to be faithfully living that out. So what should you do next? Be faithful in your relationships to those people within arm's reach. And then expect him to bless that and to multiply the lives that are within arm's reach. It's going to grow, and it's going to grow. And he's going to put you in charge of cities. I mean, that's where the parable goes. I'll put you in charge of five cities. I'll put you in charge of one, just one city. And you can issue all the orders from the mayor's office you want. Okay, in summary, remember, please, that you cannot fix the world. You can't do it. You can't fix the world or this chaos. You cannot fix the pandemic. You cannot fix all the fear. You cannot fix Facebook. You cannot fix Instagram. You definitely can't fix TikTok. That's just like, that's way out there. You can't fix it. Don't even sweat it. Why worry about it? Why worry about things that aren't under your authority, things that aren't your responsibility? You cannot fix American politics. When my wife was at various points tempted to get into Twitter battles with people, telling a story on you, babe, the rule is, yeah, do it, knock yourself out as long as you're having fun. As soon as it's like, I'm frustrated with anyone, it's like, just be done. It's like, as long as it's joyful, as long as we can just not care about the tumult because we can't fix it. It's easy to get frustrated by what we can't fix, by just stuff on the other side of the world, the other side of social media, the other side of a screen that we can't actually change. Don't get frustrated. None of us are Frodo. None of us have a ring of power that we can throw into a volcano and make it all stop. It's not going to happen. But you can be salt and light. You can be yeast. God can use your faithfulness in the relationships you've been given. He can start an avalanche of grace in your family, your community, and in our whole culture. And he could start that avalanche of grace with you. It's not hard. He can start that avalanche with you. He can start it with your kindness, your courage, your grace, your peace that surpasses all understanding. You can't start that avalanche, but he can. And he uses people. He uses means. He uses us. He loves to use the foolish things, and so we qualify. All of us, in whatever relationships, be salt and light, be yeast. In all of your relationships, be faithful, and know that it's on God to get the return on that. And he will get a return. You cannot make this moment go away, so don't even try. Use the moment. It will go away when God is finished with it. Believe that. This too shall pass. Don't try to give your sins back to God and request a different year in which to live. It won't work. He cast you for this time. Of all the people in the history of the world, you got picked for now, for this moment, for your relationships, past, present, and future, for what he will do with you. As a side note, especially to you husbands and fathers, and maybe to you wives who want some friends, one of the big things that's kind of like the elephant in the room that I've already talked to a few people about is moving to Moscow, moving here. We even have a realtor. Decent guy. No, Mike is great. We have a realtor here. If you struggle as a character, if you are not living faithfully in the relationships within arm's reach, you won't live any more faithfully here. That's not going to change. It's like, wherever you go, as my dad is fond of saying, there you are. If you're looking to sacrifice, if that's part of what a move here means, consider it. But if you're looking for a magic bullet, you're looking for a magic fix, this isn't it. If you're looking for a community that's trying to pursue life this way, this is it. But it's not going to fix you. Efficacious grace only comes from God. Get right with him and live faithfully in your relationships, and enjoy the rest of 2020. Thank you.